Natural Living with Gary Nall, Mondays and Tuesdays at 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Nall Show. And now, your host, Gary Nall.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, and you're listening to the number one radio program in America for open-minded, progressive-minded, independent thinkers. Today, we're going to explore the latest in health and healing. Then, a preview of what Trends Journal will be bringing out in 2 weeks. This is Gerald Salante's journal, and it's a wake-up call. The top trends of the coming year, and they are scary. Also, the latest on monitoring Americans. I just heard Matt Rothschild talk about how, if you're in the Air Force, you're now barred from reading the New York Times. I don't hear any media criticizing that. We should. Well, I'm going to talk about how bad we've become as a police state. Then medical schools are flunking it, keeping the faculty on their medical schools off a big pharma speaking circuit. And also, once again, for this audience, since we're now broadcasting to our KPFK and WPFW audience, 25 years every week in Washington, D.C. and Los Angeles, are we too dumb for democracy? How do we become self-delusional? Why is it no matter what the facts, the truth, we refuse to change our minds? In all paradigms, religious, political, economic, continue to believe in things that are simply proven to us to be wrong, and still we won't change our minds. I'll deal with that, and I'm going to ask you to call in. I have no guest today. Which is a good thing because it gives me a chance then later on to give you our 888 number, which I'll give you in about 10 minutes, so you can call in. Let us go to the latest on health and healing. And again, I always read the original scientific literature only from independent studies, not anything that's been sponsored by a special interest group. So therefore, you get the best information. For example, we've been told by the Library of Medicine, which I wouldn't trust at all now because its panel is stacked with pro-pharmaceutical people, that we don't have a vitamin D deficiency problem in the United States. They lie. Yes, we do. This is just the latest example. This is from the Aziz Medical College, and it was published in a major peer-reviewed journal. Here's what it says. Quote, the International Osteoporosis Foundation held a meeting in Singapore this week, and what they found was that widespread vitamin D deficiency in most older men and women, especially with hip fractures, from the medical college and also NAIAC college, they looked at patients and they found the vast majority who had any form of fractures also had low vitamin D levels. Now, the scientific literature that I've reported on hundreds of occasions have shown that when you are deficient in vitamin D, the sunshine vitamin, we're more susceptible to pneumonia and colds and flu and fractures and osteoporosis. This simply reconfirms that. So make sure that you get your vitamin D. How much do those of us who are not biased? We recommend 1,000 to 3,000 international units a day. Garlic can help protect against osteoarthritis. This is a new study published in the British Medical Journal's Musculoskeletal Disorders, and it says that a diet high in allium, and allium would be garlic, onions, and leeks, and this was done at King's College London, could make a major difference in reducing joint pain and in preventing osteoarthritis. And here's what it says. Quote, this is from the actual scientific article. Osteoarthritis is a major health issue, and this exciting study shows the potential for diet to influence the course of disease. With further work to confirm and extend these early findings, this may open up the possibility of using diet and dietary supplements in the future to treat osteoarthritis, from a professor Ian Clark, University of East Anglia. Now, here's three things. First, go back to a debate that I had with the head of the American Rheumatology Society and another leading rheumatologist on WMCA in 1976, the year before I went on WBAI. They stated as a matter of official policy, and this was to all rheumatologists and general practitioners in the United States, there was no connection between diet and arthritis either in the prevention or in the treatment, and they were emphatic. I was suggesting that they were premature and that they were political. I was showing individuals who had made major recoveries by changing their diet. Their argument was it's all anecdotal. I said all of medicine is anecdotal. Every single patient, any doctor in the history of medicine seen is anecdotal. If you go in for coronary bypass, if you go in for chemotherapy, if you go in for radiation, for a stomach cancer, no matter what you're treated for, the doctor will ask you, how are you doing? How are you feeling? And your response to the doctor will guide the doctor in continuing or changing or reducing or eliminating the therapy. That's anecdotal. They would like us to believe that we need a double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled crossover study in order to verify that something works. I would then show that most of the double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled studies in America are fraudulent. In fact, I won't state that as a positive position. I'll state it emphatically because the science shows that 90% minimally of the studies that are done of this type are hidden from the public. We will never see, nor will any scientist working on a study be able to talk about or report on adverse consequences to a study. Those are hidden. So let's say you have a drug, and this drug is not unique, it is not revolutionary, but it could be profitable. You could make 100,000% markup over its generic equivalent. And by the way, that's not an exceptional percentage of markup. So you do 100 studies, and 99 studies out of 100 show that the placebo, a sugar pill, did better. Now, one study shows that there is a 15% difference. But you also manipulated who was in the study. If a person had any pro-inflammatory conditions, they were excluded. If they were a certain age, they were excluded. If they had been a person that drank or smoked, they were excluded. If they were white, they were excluded. So in other words, about 90% of the American population might take your drug were excluded. And you only had in healthy young people. Ah, and therefore there was a difference. Then that gets published. But then the people writing the article are not the ones doing the actual study. You hire a ghostwriter to write the article. You then promote it heavily. That's science in America today. We have delegitimized science. We have mocked it. We have proprietized it, commodified it, and commercialized science. Not all, but almost all that are affiliated with who pays the bills from private industry. So now they were all wrong. All the rheumatologists in American history were idiots. Not only idiots, they actually killed people by the tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. They committed medical genocide. Just look at the New England Journal of Medicine. Look at what it published in its journal of how many people die each year from taking non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, principally for arthritis, aspirin, ibuprofen, Vioxx, Celebrex. And it was about, now it's about 24,000 a year die each year. Now, could you imagine if they only knew that you could turn off inflammation in the diet and therefore prevent it, or you could turn off inflammation once you have the arthritis and therefore wouldn't need these non-steroidal anti-inflammatories and therefore save lives. So the very thing that would prevent disease or the very thing that would save lives is denied by the Surgeon General, morbidly obese and not healthy, the head of the U.S. Public Health Service, completely toxic in the attitude towards anything that's natural and denies any virtue whatsoever in anything other than drugs for everything. Virtually all of our governmental agencies are completely and 100% corrupt because they've all been bought and sold by the big pharma. We all know it. And yet you won't hear a peep from the left on this in liberal media. Oh, heaven forbid, they should actually have someone on their show that challenges, well, did I forget what's missing? How about scholarship? Conceit in abundance. Scholarship, objective scholarship, non-existent. As a result, in medicine and healthcare, as a result, vaccines, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, overdiagnosing and medicating children, drugs for senior citizens in enormous quantities, this is how we're going about it. And that's why they were wrong back then, they're wrong today, but gee whiz, peer-reviewed journal, major study, a whole society is told the truth. What do you want to bet? Not a single person comes out of the meeting, goes home, and changes based upon the actual science. I'll get to that in a few moments. Now, here's another good science, and this comes from the peer review journal from the American Cancer Society, Journal of Proteome Research, and this is from Science Daily. Quote, study supports gluten-free diet in potential celiac disease patients. And it talked about how in this study that when they eliminated gluten, mainly from wheat-based diets, it made a major improvement. Gee whiz, where have we heard about getting rid of the wheat and gluten in the diet? How about since I've been on radio? Once again, they've been wrong, all of them, every day of their lives. They can't get anything right. Yet they get the funding, they have the respect. Isn't it just amazing? And I'm going to keep hammering this point to people in this audience, wake up. At what point do we stop listening to the people who are never right about anything, but have the power to be perceived as the only right authorities? And those in the field, the Jonathan Wrights, the Alan Gabies, the Gary Gordons, the Chris Calopes, the thousands of doctors and scientists and journalists who have been right are never asked for their opinion. One other thing we should consider, and this is about overindulgence, is not the green option. At this time of year, according to Science Daily, quote, indulgence is the buzzword. Luxury goods to buy, roaring fires to relax by, jetting off to sunnier climes, visiting distant friends and family. But how does this festive spirit align with environmental obligations and our attitudes to going green? More to the point, indulgence isn't just for Christmas, it's for the whole year. Even during a severe economic downturn, many people luxuriating in consumer goods, driving needlessly and turning up the thermostat in winter or the air conditioning in summer as a right, foregoing their green credentials again and again. Now, Erring Holden of Sogn and at a major university college has brought it to our attention that shouldn't we pay attention to this? They were writing in the International Journal of Sustainable Development. The team has carried out surveys to find a statistical correlation between factors that influence our ability to behave in an environmental-friendly way and the mechanisms of household consumption that contradict this. And they have revealed three paradoxical aspects of this problem. First, they discovered that a desire to project an environmentally friendly image has little influence on energy use in the home or transport. Secondly, a sense of powerlessness prevents people from translating positive environmental attitudes into low energy use in the home or the everyday transport. Thirdly, a desire to self-indulge prevents people from translating their purportedly environmentally friendly attitudes into low energy use for long-distance leisure travel or common air travel. The team points out, quote, public information and awareness campaigns can give consumers information on how to behave in an environmentally responsible way, but tend only to influence categories of consumption with little environmental impact. In short, we talk, but we don't act. All right? We're very good at yeah, let's sit around and talk about what's important, but let's not do anything about it. That's where we're at. I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Hey, with us today, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. Lots of calls we'll be taking a little later at 888-874-4888. But here is what I'd like to ask you. Are Americans too dumb for democracy? Are our politicians, the President of the United States, all presidents of the United States, all members of the Supreme Court, are they really smart? I don't think so. I think they're all idiots. Why do I think they're idiots? Because everything they should do is blocked by their own self-delusion. Like the Supreme Court, those who did voted to allow corporations to be considered with the same rights as individuals. That's absurd, because the extension of the unintended or intended consequences would be that now corporations, even foreign governments, can come in and buy an election. They have far more power and money, unlimited financial resources, because they can create debt that we cannot, in order to get their campaign message across, get their candidate across. Hence, they control the levers of power. That which they want deregulated will be deregulated. That they want put in place to stop competition and create trusts and monopolies will occur. And all the while, the sanctimony of the idiots that are the Supreme Court justices, and that's all they are. And let's face it, you think these people are so special. We have this really bad quality in America, assuming because someone is rich, powerful, successful, or a celebrity that they are better. No, they're not. They are no different. They just have access to public opinion and policy making that we do not. Now, from a simple commentary from Stephen DeFrescio. Quote, a recent cognitive study, as reported by the Boston Globe, concluded that facts don't necessarily have the power to change our mind. In fact, quite the opposite. In a series of studies, researchers at the University of Michigan found that when misinformed people, how about everyone that you know in government, particularly political partisans, were exposed to corrected facts in news stories, they rarely changed their minds. Gee whiz, let me see how that would work. Synthetic hormone replacement therapy for women increases the risk of breast cancer, stroke, heart attacks, and uterine cancer, dementia, and colorectal cancer. And we've known this for 30 years, but we don't change it at all. We still have 10 million American women using it. So the women are dumb because they should do the homework and know that this information out there, this isn't hidden information. This isn't secret. You don't have to go with a Sherpa to the high cliffs of Mount anything to find this information. It's in plain view. The doctors certainly know this. So why in the world would they not say, in the best interest of saving and protecting the woman's health and body, we will no longer use this therapy? And how about statins? And how about bypass surgery and all the other antipsychotic medication? Medicine is rife with this mechanism of not allowing any truth or any facts to challenge their mindsets. In fact, they often become even more strongly set and more reticent in their beliefs when challenged. Facts, they found, were not curing misinformation. Like an underpowered antibiotic, facts could actually make misinformation even stronger. Glenn Beck. Glenn, you are wrong in your interpretation of history, but it doesn't matter to you or your audience. You're wrong on assuming that someone who is a progressive is also a Marxist and a communist and a socialist. You're wrong on saying President Obama and the entire Republican body politic is wrong, calling him a socialist. He is a radically conservative Democrat. He is a Clinton Democrat. But if I'm wrong, show me the facts. Here are the facts. He supported an escalation in the war, yet he was initially voted in no small measure and would not have been the nomination had he not been about getting us out of the war. He was against the type of NAFTA agreement, said in Columbus, Ohio, he was going to change it. He didn't. He increased the amount of free trade around the world and globalization. He increased our commitment financially in the military-industrial complex. He got rid of habeas corpus. He got rid of the FISA illegalities so that all of our telephone messages and all of our communications, electronic communications, could be monitored illegally. He has not prosecuted anyone for crimes against humanity from the former administration that got us into illegal, unethical wars. And he gave all the money to major corporations and to Wall Street and allowed the Federal Reserve to give $3.3 trillion in secret cash, 21,000 transactions, only at 0% interest to its favored partners in the business community. Not a penny to the small business, not a penny to the average American, not a penny to the unemployed. He hasn't stopped one home from being foreclosed on personally, though he has the power to do so, nor has he chosen to lower the credit card interest rates, which he could. He could have done thousands of things that would have showed he really cared about people. But he sure does care about corporations now. Is that align with your statements, oh, he's a socialist? No. This is where the self-delusion appears so regularly in normal thinking that we fail to detect it in ourselves, and when faced with facts that do not fit seamlessly into our individual belief systems, our minds automatically reject or backfire the presented facts. The result of backfire is that we become even more entrenched in our beliefs, even if those beliefs are totally or partially false. The conclusion is that facts do not determine our beliefs. The truth does not determine our beliefs. Reality does not determine our beliefs. Rather, our beliefs, which are non-rational beliefs, determine the facts that we accept. Hence, nothing changes for the better. Those are my interpretations. I'd like to hear yours. Our number, 888-874-4888. And now we're going into our studio in New York City until people start calling in, and say hello to our program director. I'm out on the road filming a new documentary that we do not want to know about in America. We do not want to know that our neighbors are being thrown out on the street and we in our house are not coming out and showing solidarity. We are keeping our money in the very banks that are going to foreclose on us. We are supporting Bank of America and Citicorp as if these are good people and ethical people. We're not questioning where our pension money is invested. So we are now, as a nation, suffering intentionally with Stockholm Syndrome. So when they kick you in the teeth, ask them, please, sir, could I shine the shoe I might have scuffed by my teeth scraping across your shoe? What a nation we'd become. One of the people who will not lie and has no fear of telling the truth is Gerald Celante. Here's what he's written in the Trends Journal. Okay. They're talking about the following. They believe, screw the people. Quote, as times get even tougher and people get even poorer, the authorities will intensify their efforts to extract the funds needed to meet financial obligations. While there will be variations on the theme, the government's song will be the same. Cut what you give, raise what you take. Crime waves. No job plus no money plus compounded debt equal high stress, strained relations, short fuses. In 2011, with a fuse lit, it will be a prime time for crime time. And when people lose everything and they have nothing to lose, they lose it. Hardship-driven crimes will be committed across the socioeconomic spectrum by legions of the on-the-edge desperate who will do whatever they must to keep a roof over their heads and put food on the table. Crackdown on liberty. As crime rates rise, so will the voices. Boy, I can just hear Sean Hannity now Someday we might see him in his tutu out there running around in combat boots and, oh God, I'd pay to see that. Man who just never seems to believe that we don't have enough get tough on crime. Yeah? Well, there'll be a national crusade. Get tough on crime will be waged against American citizens. And just as the war on terror, where suspected terrorists are killed before proven guilty or jailed without trial, the war on crime, everyone is suspected until proven innocent. And of course, Glenn Beck could lead his army of individuals against those damn dangerous liberals and progressives because they're communists and he is the new McCarthy. What a delusional character. Then alternative energy in laboratories and workshops unnoticed by mainstream analysts, scientists, visionaries, and entrepreneurs are forging a new physics incorporating principles once thought impossible, working to create devices that liberate more energy than they consume. What are they and how long will it take before they're brought to market? Shrewd investors will ignore the can't-be-done skepticism and examine the newly emerging energy trend opportunities that will come next year. Journalism 2.0. Though the trend has been in the making since the dawn of the Internet Revolution, 2011 will mark the year that new methods in news and information distribution will render the 20th century model obsolete. With its unparalleled reach across borders and language barriers, journalism 2.0 has the potential to influence and educate citizens in the way that governments and corporate media moguls would never permit. Of the hundreds of trends we have forecast over the 3 decades, few had the possibility of such far-reaching efforts. And youth of the world unite. University degrees in hand, yet out of work, in debt, and with no prospects on the horizon, feeling betrayed and angry, forced to live back at home, young adults and 20-somethings are mad as hell and they're not going to take it anymore, filled with vigor, rife, and passion, but not mature enough to control their impulses. The confrontations they engage in will often escalate disproportionately. Government efforts to exert control and return the youth to quiet complacency will be ham-fisted and ineffectual. The revolution will be televised, blogged, YouTube, Twittered. Those are the trends for this coming year from the Trends Journal. Let's go ahead and say hello to Kara Lee. Hi, Kara.
Good afternoon, Gary. Well, kind of going on some of the subjects you were touching on earlier, I found this really interesting article talking about how hundreds of U.S. cities are, you know, facing really financial ruin. And, you know, this actually is also taking place in Europe and across the globe. And this is something, you know, you mentioned a long time ago, Gary. I believe we were talking about this about a year ago now. And what I kind of wanted you to ask you about, Gary, is, you know, how does this affect the families? And, you know, what does this really affect these cities going down and the governments not being able to pay their bills? How does this affect individual communities?
Well, first, this is not new. Since the 1930s, more than 350 communities have become insolvent, file for bankruptcy. States cannot legally and technically become bankrupt, but what they can do is they have funds, and these are municipal bonds. The municipal bond is what a person invests in and generally gets they can get a return depending upon the market circumstances and the credit ratings and the solvency of the state or community, anywhere from 3% to as high as 6%. Let's just settle on 4%. And considering that your savings and loan account is giving you nothing, for a lot of people, that's where they've invested. However, we're going to see, I believe that we will see two things happening in the next 24 months. I believe that the European Central Bank will have about another trillion to $1.3 trillion that must raise, principally from Germany. And then there's a certain point where even the German people will say no more for Latvia, for Ireland. United Kingdom is completely bankrupt. You cannot put that back together again. And at the very time that they're bankrupt, their banks are saying, cut back on auditors. The last thing in the world you should do is cut back on bank regulators. That only creates another bubble. Spain is a major country economically, one of the largest economies in the world, and Portugal. So what we've done thus far, we've seen between Greece and Ireland, about $600 billion. That will be chump change compared to what's coming. They cannot pay it, because understand what happens. The banks and higher institutions of finance that got them into this problem by doing derivative trading and working, truncating the housing bubble markets, same thing we did in the United States, they did there. In England and Ireland, for example, the Celtic Tiger, you could buy a house 20 years ago for about $50,000. It suddenly, in the last 5 years, went up to about $400,000. So everybody was buying everything at the high end of the market, and it collapsed. Now, who gets helped? The banks get helped in the United States. The banks get helped in every country of the world. The people then have to go through a structural adjustment austerity program, 20 to 25% initially, and they're fighting back. In the United States, we don't fight back. We just moan, turn the channel, and try to be distracted with bread and circuses. So what's happening is that at a certain point, Americans finally will wake up when the lava is entering the bedroom window and someone says, "It's awful hot in here. Yeah, I think we ought to do something about it." They will do it long before we do. So pay attention to Europe. Watch the BBC. Do not watch any American media. It's biased. It's stupid. It's limited. And especially don't watch Fox. That's just pure pornography. Okay? It is corrupted from top to bottom. It's not journalism. In fact, hello, the Los Angeles Times today said that Fox is no longer journalism and should grow up and get rid of its biases, to act as if it's a journalist. There's nothing fair and balanced about it. In any case, the canary in the coal mine is Europe. What happens in Europe will happen in the United States, because financially we are becoming a third world country, not technologically. And remember, we don't have one economy in the United States. We have 8 economies at least. The oil energy cartels, that's an economy. The financial services industry that does not invest in America, does not invest in new jobs, doesn't help industries in your local community, but rather outsources. If they can use equity partnerships to buy a company, load it with debt, downsize the company, tear off its parts, and then move the whole operation to Singapore or China or India, where it can get cheap labor and then import that product back in the United States so you buy it at Walmart, that's the only thing Wall Street does anymore. So when I said we should allow all of Wall Street to fail, and it wouldn't have hurt us at all, we would have been a better country, now guess who was right? Take a look at all the Ben Bernanke's and all the economists from Harvard. They were all wrong. Every single one was wrong. So I'm saying let all the big banks fail. Take your money out of banks and put them in savings and loans or credit unions. Rip up your credit card. You've got to get off their grid. Then you have big pharma. Stop buying unless it's organic and locally grown. Don't buy their genetically modified, because that's an industry, and again, it's a big industry. Pharmaceutical companies, that's another, that's an entire, and saving the insurance industries and the hospital associations and housing. These are all economies. And then you look at the average American. We have about 120 million Americans who are working out of 309 million. One-third today are at the poverty level, according to a study that was just released today. And we have $2 trillion in debt at the local level. Now, how in the world did we end up with $2 trillion in cities around the United States and no one pay attention? It was simple. We predicted this 2 years ago, if you remember, when I talked about we have 5 bubbles. And I said what is happening is this. The local government aligns itself with unions, employees unions, and other unions to get elected. The unions say we want a cost of increase in living across the board, we want pension increase, whatever it is, and they got them. Then the state did the same thing. The legislators, the governors ran based upon promises of giving, 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 and all these were based upon entitlements. Then contractors. Who actually does something? Have you ever seen 16 people standing around talking while one guy works? That's a state contract, a county contract, a city contract. As towns began to grow with economic bubbles in real estate, every community in America wanted to show that they were prosperous and they increased their budgets. Most of this was bloated bureaucracy. It was not needed. Where it was needed is improving education and rebuilding infrastructures. More often than not, however, it went into unnecessary redundancy. Now, so we created massive bureaucracies, but most bureaucracies dwarf compared to the federal government's bureaucracy. And the government wasn't willing to cut back its departments and give consumer oversight and properly regulate it. The problems were exactly opposite what the Republicans and conservatives suggested. They said let the free market determine, as did Ron Paul and some libertarians. That part of their philosophy was wrong. We deregulated, we underregulated, and we took away enforcement. As a result, we see massive exploitation. We saw the Glass-Steagall Act taken away. We saw the Commodities Future Trading Act modified. And as a result, people could trade in commodities like oil. They didn't buy any oil. They just bought shares to exchange, so they took it from $47 to $147. That meant you and I had to pay more for heating oil and gasoline, so Goldman Sachs and Citicorp, the two together who did this, could make hundreds of millions of dollars per week in profit. How do you think they got those $20 and $30 billion of net profit in the year they could share with their employees and partners? But they never created jobs. They never brought down the price of fuel or food or commodity essential life. Now, did we have a president or Congress that stepped in and outlaw trading in commodity essential life? No. So if the federal government can get away with all this and the politicians to get reelected provided an enormous amount of pork to their local constituents, and nobody wanted to take on the military-industrial complex, which would save us $1 trillion a year and not undermine our security at all, then why should the states and why should the local communities? So everybody simply spent what they did not have and kept putting it further into the future, especially with underfunded or unfunded entitlements on pensions. Now, it's all come crashing down. Now, people actually have to do something. And good for those people who are doing it. Across the board, everybody should made to be in pain equally. They should not have passed this tax reduction for the rich and the middle class. Instead, what they should have done is immediately reduce the size of unnecessary government. Now, the idea that we don't need government is absurd. We need effective government with consumer oversight and accountability, with proper regulations that actually protect us at an environmental level and safety level, and that we simply do not have. We have massive industries writing our laws and massive industries like the Big Agri that control our Department of Agriculture. All the top people there are all from the DuPont and Monsanto. They control the White House. They control everything. So until we recognize that we are in complete denial about our democracy and we actually have a plutocracy in America, then we won't get a handle on this. We've got to cut back on all spending, including pensions across the board, and no matter who's going to scream and yell, if we do it today, we have a future. If we don't do it today because we'll be voted out, you'll only be one time in office, then we won't have, our children won't have a future, and we are bankrupt. Right now, we owe $200 trillion. We are bankrupt. We are completely, totally, 100% bankrupt. And where's it going to happen? You're going to see the bankruptcy, not at the Fed, because the Fed can print money as if it's Zimbabwe. It's monetizing its debt, meaning there's no one to buy it. And it's just done it with $3.3 trillion with another $9 trillion that was secretly done, plus another $800 billion, $600 billion, and $1.2 trillion. So all this is monopoly money. And the rest of the world is going to stop buying our currency in the next 24 months. They're going to go to other mixed currencies like Brazil, the BRIC countries, which are more stable and their economies are actually growing. We've exported our future. They're importing. They have manufacturing. We don't. We've become a service industry. So now we have to pay the price. Finally, the 700-pound gorilla is given the bill for the endless buffet that they've been gorging on. The local communities are going to default. The bonds are going to collapse because they're going to default on the bonds. Watch to see. I'm going to predict 150 to 200 cities and communities will default on their bonds. States will default. And I believe that they should have defaulted. I believe Ireland and Portugal and Spain and France should leave the European Union, go back to their own currencies, and do what Argentina does. Say, sorry, banks, we're not giving you a nickel. And we're going to keep this money to rebuild our society instead of having our citizens who are already hurting be hurt by more austerity programs. We should do the same in the United States. We should default on all financial obligations and return the cities and communities to an austerity program. And it means downsizing, you bet. You're going to see downsizing across the board all over America. You're going to have small areas. You'll have Taos, New Mexico, and Santa Fe, and Boulder, and you'll have Newport Beach and West Palm Beach and Palm Springs and Bel Air and Beverly Hills and Manhattan and Upper Westchester and Southampton, East Hampton. You'll have about 200 communities in the United States that will be reservoirs of economic stability, and that's where you will have roads paved, the snow will be removed on time, the police will be adequate, security will be fine, schools will be fine. The moment you go out of that area, you might as well be in Calcutta, because America, mark my words, I said this 3 years ago, before the crisis, I said America in the next 5 years will look like 30% Paris and 70% Calcutta. Well, we're getting there now, and if you're where I am, traveling America outside of Washington, outside of New York, and outside of Los Angeles, you actually see poor. You see poor in the new poor, and now today, one in three working families is poor. Poverty. Poor. So that's where we're at. So the bond market is going to collapse, and that's what I see. Hope that answers your question.
Thanks, Gary.
Let's say hello now to our first caller, John from Ganver. Where's Ganver, Maryland?
Yes, how are you?
Good, John.
I had the same question. I have most of my money in mutual funds, and I'm worried about losing it all.
I would shift out of mutual funds because a lot of mutual funds are moving out of municipal bonds, which they should. And I wouldn't put my money in any of the foreign bonds because before this is over, if a government in Greece or government in France or government in Ireland has to look at continuing to pay very high interest rates, frequently over 120% of their gross domestic product, meaning no matter what they do, they're going to have less income coming in, and every single nickel they have coming in will already be eaten alive by their debt. So if you have 100% debt, more than what you have income, you're bankrupt. How much punishment are you going to inflict upon your citizens before the citizens tear down your buildings and put you on trial of crimes against humanity for giving it to the banks? You're going to see that in England. Watch Ireland. More than any other country in Europe, Ireland is the one with the capacity to remember its past and its brutal hometown living under home country living under the heel of England, and it fought back, and England with all of its power and intelligence couldn't stop it. Now you're going to see the entire country united against the banking system. I believe that's going to happen all over the world, where finally the countries say, we're not going to give another nickel to another bank or financial institution. If you'd never want to give us another penny, fine, but we're going to go back to our own local currencies. That, I believe, is what's going to happen, not before there's a lot of pain and suffering. And then watch it, because once that happens there, it's only within 3 years, I predict at the latest 3 years, America will be in absolute civil breakdown with enormous repression of the police state coming in to put down any dissent and arrest and imprison all Americans considered to be in any way having an opinion that would challenge the power of those in office. Okay?
So where would you put your money now if it was made?
Right now, you remember when I told you what gold would go to? when it, I told you at $322 that it's going to go to $1,500 within a year. Well, it's almost at $1,500, and from there, once the currency gets depreciated, which it will in the next 24 months, and once the other currencies start becoming the currency of record as a supportive backup currency, look for gold to go to $3,000 and silver to go to $40 to $60. That's my prediction. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. That's what I believe. Okay, thanks. What? Let's say hello to Anna from Florida. Hi, Anna.
Hi, Gary. Thank you for taking my call. I feel like asking you two questions. One would be practical when you talk about gold and silver. What form of gold and silver would you advise to buy? That's one question. Second question is rather about humanity. When I listen to your show, I'm deeply concerned about everything what's going on around the world. It seems like we are getting into the chaos theory, not theory, but actually chaos practically all over the world. And it seems like at this time, you know, humanity has a very bad leadership all over the world. And how come? Are we such as zombies that we don't really, we are so unconscious to choose such a leaders all over the world? I'm talking about humanity. Or we are so zombied that we are so unconscious and we don't know really what is going on.
Okay, let's pull back a moment. Let's pull back and look at your first statements. First, the only gold or silver you should buy, never certificates and never these stupid 30% premiums for some coin, rare coins. That's all a gimmick and a marketing scheme. Only buy like the maple leaf gold and possess it in 1 ounce pieces. The same with silver. It's not whether you're going to go out and trade the currency. It is a backup reserve currency. It is a hedge against inflation. That's what I would do there. Secondly, I don't believe that we're unconscious at all. I don't believe that we have any zombie people in the United States. I believe that what we have done is very consciously chosen not to address any issue. For the very reason I mentioned earlier in the program when I said that are we too dumb for democracy? We're choosing to stay within paradigms. The Democrats are locked rigidly in their paradigm, blaming the Republicans. The Republicans are locked into their paradigm of blaming the liberals. And Glenn Beck is confused what he is, and all the other pundits are locked into their ideologies. The people who do see the truth are your independents. The trouble is the independents do not have a forum. You don't see true independents, and you certainly don't see progressives. You will never see the real progressives appearing in the media because no one knows how to handle them. They are too strange in how they approach a problem. They actually have solutions. So instead of solutions, we want to keep bouncing the ball between Keith Olbermann, the perfect Democrat ideologue on the one hand, and Sean Hannity on the other, and let them fight it out like two spoiled brat school kids who are multimillionaires playing a game that they will never have to see a poor person unless one happens to fall down in front of them. And so they have no solutions. They are zero on solutions. The answer is not in Washington. The answer is not on television. And the average American does not want to distract themselves. Even those who will go out at this time of year when they do not have any money, when they are faced with foreclosure and say, well, gee whiz, I got to get the kids this. And now the very last vestiges of reason and common sense, save the money for food, save the money for fuel, save the money in case you are dispossessed, save the money in case you have to rent a hotel. They'll go buy something the kids don't need, won't appreciate, throw away, and then end up with a bill, and now they are sunk. So what has happened is our consciousness is fully intact. We're using 100% of our facilities, but our belief system says you cannot think outside of the box, and as long as you're in the box, your reality, your truths must come from your belief. The trouble is these truths are never real universal truths. They are beliefs, and beliefs are all self-limiting. Now, there are valued points within the liberal community, and there are valued points within the conservative community. We shouldn't be spending what we don't have. We should make government small and accountable. We should have those regulations actually protect us, but otherwise we should get government out of our lives. So therefore, the libertarians, the constitutionalists, and the conservatives are right. Government has encroached too much. It is dictatorial, and now it tells us we must buy health insurance or we break the law and we'll be penalized. That's wrong. You know, we should have freedom of choice. On the other hand, the liberals are correct that we should care about the poor and we should have universal health care. They're absolutely correct on that. but we shouldn't have unlimited government, which is what the liberals have promoted. But the hypocrites of the conservatives have had unlimited government. The largest governments in history until now have been under the conservatives. So they're all hypocritical, and they refuse to look at the truth in their own belief systems. It's like the person who is not teaching their class, the kids in their class, but instead diagnosing any kid that acts out or doesn't pay attention with ADD. That's not a good school teacher. But that teacher's rewarded for being dysfunctional in how they do things as long as they play by the rules. If a doctor killed every patient that came to see him, treated for cancer, gave him chemotherapy, and if every patient died, as long as they were using completely accepted medical practice, they would be rewarded. That's wrong, but that's the paradigm. And the paradigm is based upon a belief rather than reality. So the belief becomes a reality. So don't look at people as being zombies. They are not. Don't look at it as being unconscious. We are not. Don't look at anyone as being as not being aware of the problem. We are. The trouble is the solutions lie outside of the existing paradigm. And as long as the solutions cannot be applied to a person within the paradigm, then they won't use it. And that goes across families. If the family says, what's wrong with eating meat and potatoes and Jell-O? And the person says, well, but it's not healthy. Well, look at us. We're fine. And then you suddenly are struck with the idea of, do you have the courage to step out of your paradigm? Because when you do, understand that you'll be leaving friends and family behind. They will think you're a nut job. They'll think you've gone off the reservation emotionally and mentally. If you're an academic, they'll think that something has happened to your brain. So we only are processing information and policies from policymakers and opinion leaders who are intimately tied to very rigid ideological paradigms, medical, social, religious, political, economic, environmental. Hence, we cannot find the solutions in the existing paradigms. So no matter how many times you curse a tape that's in your conscious, subconscious, and condemn it and analyze it, it doesn't change the message on it. You must step out of the paradigm to have a different message. And we're not willing to do it because it would mean we would have to acknowledge we were wrong and learn the lessons. And the trouble is the people who have done so have not yet empowered themselves to take the next step. And that will happen only through crisis. In crisis, we will find the effort to become more conscious. Hope that answers your question, Anna, from Florida. Thank you. Carl from Silver Springs, Maryland.
Yes, Gary. I'm wondering about gold and silver. Do you have any ways of, if you want to participate in the market, how you can get a better handle on whether the market can be controlled by the banks in terms of the gold and silver?
The banks are banks and special investment hedge funds are loaded up on gold, but some are trying to play gold. Some benefit if they short gold. I believe that you have to look beyond gold. What drives gold is the stability of the dollar. And what drives the stability of the dollar is whether or not we're over-monetizing, whether or not we put too much money into the circulation, because it works in this way. The more dollars you print and put into circulation, the less the value of the dollars that are in circulation. It diminishes it. But we're wanting people to believe that this is not the case, that we can print any amount of money. And it will should not affect the value of the dollar because we're holding interest at zero and we're allowing banks to borrow. And banks are then going to take this borrowed money at zero interest and invest it in industries and small businesses. That's a complete and total lie. All of the money that the banks are borrowing, they're using to buy up their competition, to give rewards as bonuses to their executives, and to build up the price of their stock. So it has worked just the opposite. And by the way, Keynesian economics has never worked. That is a myth, and anyone who is a true economist knows that. But trouble is most economists have never had the advantage of owning their own business, nor have most of the people in Washington, and certainly none of the presidents have. Had they ever owned a business, they would know real economics, and it's only from those real economics that you understand that you've got to stop all the money from going where it's at, and you've got to start taking money away in the form of subsidies. If we took away the military-industrial complex subsidies and brought back all of our military bases and closed them down and stopped all these stupid intelligence agencies that are doing nothing more than policing Americans, collecting data on us. And if we took away the energy cartel subsidies and the big agri subsidies and the pharmaceutical subsidies and the insurance company subsidies, we would save $2.3 trillion a year. That is what we should do. That would not raise taxes. That would increase the ability for us to better balance our budget. If we then cut back on our entitlements across the board equally and had a flat tax that every corporation would have to pay, a reasonable flat tax that they could not have any deductions, that would save an additional $6 trillion that have been outsourced over offshore corporations in the last 10 years. That money should be in the United States, and that money would help. And if we put a tax of 50% on hedge fund money and any money made in trading and commodities, that would bring us in an additional $1 trillion a year. So we could make money, pay our bills, save money, balance the budget if we chose to do the right thing. Now, will we do that? We won't do any of that. We can't, because the ideologies won't allow us. So the next best thing is make your own life work. And prepare, if you live in communities around the United States, most of those communities are going to have a lot of trouble, and it's only going to get worse. We're at the beginning, the very beginning of our problems in the United States. With all the home foreclosures and 22 million Americans homeless today or out of their homes today, and with one in three American families living at the poverty level, we haven't even seen pain yet. But we are about to. We're going into a 15-year massive depression. I put that on the record. I'm not equivocating. And every single talking head on television says just the opposite. Let's see who's right. I hope I'm wrong, but let's see who's right. Have a nice day, everyone.
Singing a song, and it's a good day for moving along. Yes, it's a good day. How could anything be wrong? A good day from morning till night. And it's a good day for shining your shoes, and it's a good day for losing the blues. Everything to gain and nothing to lose. A good day from morning till night.
The Gary Knoll Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride. And the program director is Carol Lee.
And you got the right of way, 'cause it's a good day for paying your bills, and it's a good day.